Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Armchair Refs. Take a seat and join us. How are you feeling, Mike? Big Super Saturday.
I feel great. Well, you know, I think, Ben, I'm feeling quite sad. You know, it's the end of the Six Nations now. It means we've got a bit of a break until we get to see any more international rugby. But I really enjoyed watching the final games this past weekend. So, yeah, can't complain. How about yourself?
Yeah, pretty good. Another tournament where South Africa didn't record a single win, so you can't complain. Wales, count yourself lucky. I would say, no, I loved it. I was going to say, sad it's over, but glad it happened, you know, and all those other emotive quotes that you see scrolling through Instagram.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it was really good to just see the different storylines kind of, you know, wrap up. And yeah, it was eventful. I think it probably didn't go, it definitely didn't go the way that we anticipated it to go. I think with, you know, we were kind of expecting different results or, you know, different styles of games, but in the end, they were still really good to watch.
Yeah, cracking. I feel a bit bad for saying Ireland will beat Scotland by 25 points now.
I know. As soon as I was watching it and it was like 1 point at half time, I was like, goodness me, we went over the over.
Yeah, but I'll stick by my decision. Next year, they're going to win by 25.
Sure. Of course. Yeah.
As I say. But I think if we're talking about excitement of games, do you want to start at the end?
Yes.
Go wild. What did you think of that game?
This game saved the Super Saturday for me. I think this was by far the best game of the weekend. There's definitely a strong argument this is the game of the tournament, to be honest. I really enjoyed the French regaining their identity. I think they took a long time to get to that type of performance that we saw, but I'm glad that they got there eventually. And I think that's what they were trying to get to in the previous 4 weeks. I think England also, they kind of answered a lot of those questions where we were thinking, can they go back to back in having really good performances against the big teams? And yeah, they showed that they can do it, and almost getting a result away from home as well. So I think from both sides of the camps, I think there's a lot of positives, even though England lost. I think, yeah, there's a lot of positives to take away from it.
Yeah, exactly. And how French of them to be like, the English, we need to win this game. Acting professional, sign me up. But, but they really turned it on. I was really happy because we have slated them a bit, but they've kind of deserved it. So it was great to see them catch fire again. If they could have just done it for 79 minutes, that would have been good. But yeah. What a day. I enjoyed it. I had a good time.
Even though you lost?
Even though we lost. I was just happy. I think, like, look back to the start of the Six Nations, Mike. England playing boring rugby, you know, we're edging out wins. We just about beat Wales, who, you know, we'll get onto them later, but they'll have let themselves down this tournament. And yeah, things weren't happy. And then to come out, get a bonus point against probably one of the top four teams in the world. What a good turnaround. I'm a happy boy.
I think, as I mentioned, I think there's a lot of things that English fans can be happy about. And there's been such a huge development in the England game. If you know, go back to the semi-final against South Africa, and you know, or just in general, what we were seeing in the World Cup, it was very much a let's kick the ball away, defend, and just convert, you know, penalty points. And, you know, now you're creating way more opportunities on attack, but still have that, you know, really impressive defense. And as well, you know, you're implementing this new defensive system from Felix Jones, and you're starting to reap the benefits of, you know, the growing pains. So, yeah, I think it was a good campaign for you guys.
Yeah. And I think especially in that game at the weekend, like France in the first half were unplayable. We really, really did well to kind of just hang on and get that try before half time. Whereas I think in the past we might have fallen away and just well, like last year against France, we lost like 60 something. I've erased the exact scoreline from my mind, but it was pretty poor. So I say it's nice to see fight right to the end. And as Steve Borthwick wisely said, we didn't lose. We just ran out of time.
Oh, I hated that he said that. It's such a poor quote. What is that? You lost. No, because you, I'm not going to get into that, but I think he just needed to own up and say, you know, France were the better side. And, you know, they were better on the day and, you know, take it on the chin and move on.
Yeah. Well, that's a not an English view of it. Do you know what I mean? We're raging that was even a penalty, Mike.
Hey, I think it's a good point. And I was very happy when it happened because obviously I texted you saying, there's just something about, you know, England and France losing to a last minute penalties. But from my point of view, I thought it was a no arms tackle.
Yeah.
And when I've looked back on it, there didn't seem to be a massive wrap. And I knew that sometimes when you're basically going low and somebody kind of like runs into the shoulder, you know, it can be hard to kind of show the wrap, particularly because it was Benno's right shoulder. I think it was a penalty. Clear as day. What were your thoughts?
Right. I think you're right. It's a penalty all day, right? I agree. The only thing that annoys me is there's so many times it's not given.
Mm.
Do you know what I mean? I've got no problem with it being a penalty, but I've seen it missed so many times. It would have been nice if this was one of them.
Sure. You just wanted to go in your favor.
Yeah, that would have been great. Thanks. But I'd say I'm not mad about it. Just use it to stir the pot, you know what I mean?
Yeah, of course, of course. And going back to what you said earlier about scoring about half time, I think you saw, you know, you kind of have those team talks growing up throughout rugby. You know, the most important times are before the half and after the half. You want to come out firing, you want to impose your play style on the opposition, and England did exactly that. I was really disappointed by Fiku missing that one-on-one with Ollie Lawrence to go in. I think that France had a lot of momentum in the first half, was predominantly theirs, and then this was just an easy way for let them to slip back into the game. And the same thing coming out of the sheds after halftime, you know, historically you've got to switch on immediately and France didn't, and then England were able to capitalize.
Yeah. I mean, to be fair, would you want to tackle Ollie Lawrence? I'm screaming your man.
For my country, I would.
Yeah, I know. I think you could say the same about a couple of the French tries though. I think there are a couple of situations, you know, like, oh, it was a well-worked try, but you're like, oh, I wonder if they could have got that.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's all if, buts, and maybes. At the end of the day, we've say it all the time. If you're in the position to lose the game at the end of the game, fair enough if you lose.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So I can't argue too much. And that was the longest kick of the tournament. So fair play. He's got some nuts on him.
Absolutely. It was a monster kick. It really was. And I think for me, watching... when both teams were able to play at the pace that they wanted to, it just allowed, that's when they scored, and that was for both of them. So I think, England were able to get front, could get, you know, a lot of momentum, and they were, you know, quick phases, their clear outs, you know, it's not something that's particularly looked at, but if you have efficient clear outs, it just makes your attack so much more fluid. And that was very evident to see over the weekend. But France and England, they played at the pace they wanted to in parts, and that then resulted in them scoring afterwards.
I know. And talking about playing at pace and exciting, how good is Legarec? Two games in a row. Unbelievable. Like Dupont who?
Well, so somebody asked me the question, you know, Dupont comes back into their team, does he walk straight into that nine slot? Without a question, he does.
Mate, he's the starting 10 of French rugby. He plays there for Toulouse. I swear to say.
But Gatler-Legarec, he was phenomenal. These opportunities where players are injured or, you know, where they're, you know, they're going and pursuing other things, provides opportunities for others to step up. And he absolutely took that Nine shirt completely out of Luku's hand. Yeah. And I can't wait to look forward to his development, because he's also a really young player as well.
Yeah, he's only like 21, 22.
Yeah, ridiculous. Ridiculous.
Scary. But I reckon we're going down in order of quality of games, right?
Sure.
So where are we going next?
I think the next game would probably be the Ireland-Scotland game.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right.
Yeah, give me your overall thoughts. What were you thinking whilst you watched this one?
I think it was a good game. I think I was preparing for it to be more one-sided than it was,
mm-hmm.
especially on the scoreboard, because of how Ireland have been just able to rack up points.
Yeah.
But yeah, like it was way closer, which always makes it better watching, even if the game's not top quality, just that edgy affair. And realistically, it's a final for Ireland, right? And mm-hmm. they've got a history of choking, so they managed to come through strong. But I think the scoreline probably still flattered Scotland still. There were long periods where Ireland were dominated and just not getting the points. But yeah, it was good to watch and say, enjoyable, tight, tense. And yeah, well, what do you think, Mike?
I agree for the most part. I think it was annoyingly tense, but not tense. Mm. Just because it felt like it was really tense for a long period of time. You know, where it was just, you know, Scotland defending. And it just almost just became a bit monotonous for me. I think, you know, I really enjoy those tense moments when they are moments, when they are the final 5 minutes or whether they come in 2 minute gaps, you know, if that makes sense. I just felt, I'll come out and say it, I thought Finn Russell was absolutely poor. I think that was his worst game of the championship. I didn't see him take control of the game. I didn't see him produce anything. There were some uncharacteristic errors. You know, for example, kicking it out on the full, you know, off the kickoff. And I think that was a really pivotal moment. I think it was an opportunity for Scotland to bounce back immediately after conceding points. And it just gave the ball immediately back to Ireland. But I thought that, yeah, Ireland can look back and know that they can win those tight games, you know, with backs against the walls, and they can still get the job done. And Scotland, they know that they can put up with the best in the, you know, one of the best in the world and, you know, go toe to toe with them. I think, you know, they can hold them out. I think they just need to work on it, turning the ball over and actually maintaining possession and building some attacking phases, because that was what was really lacking.
Which is wild for Scotland, right? Because they're renowned for how good their attack is. And it's something that they pride themselves on. And it was quite surprising that that's the area of the game that let them down.
I know. It's almost like Scotland can't be good at both sides of the ball. They have to be good at an attack and poor in defence, or the other way around. So that's where they need to... yeah, figure it out for next year or coming into summer and autumn now.
Yeah, because they've got a bit of a, well, comparably lightweight tour. I think they're doing like the Americas.
Yeah.
So, you know, maybe they just need a rest. You know what I mean? Like brutal World Cup exit, Six Nations. It's not been how they want. Maybe they just need some time to just chill out and regather. And hopefully they'll come back in autumn ready and raring to go.
I would agree. I still think I'm in the camp that something needs to change within the camp. I said camp way too many times there. I wouldn't be surprised if we see some coaching changes, whether that is Gregor or whether we actually see some new coaches come in, you know, attacking or defensive wise. There's just I mentioned before, I'll say it briefly again, we just need to see something, improvements consistently from Scotland. We can't just settle for them, you know, coming fourth or third every single year. They seem to string it together for one game and they're just not consistent enough. This has been the Scottish way for years now. So I do wonder, when do they start thinking about, you know, switching up? I mean, look at like what's happened to Italy. You know, they, you know, changed it up and, you know, had their best Six Nations, you know, in, you know, years. So that's my stance on the future of Scottish rugby.
Yeah, I think something that I've heard quite a lot in the media is about the investment. So Italy have come really good and their under-20s are good. Mm-hmm. But there's been like loads of money going into like Benetton, Treviso, mm-hmm. and like things are growing and it's kind of paying off. It's like a long-term project, but I don't know if you get that in Scotland. Like, they've got a great group of players outside of the kind of the couple of clubs. I don't know how much money's going into the game. It's a shame because I actually used to really, really like Scotland when they were like really, when they went from bad to being like pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I was like, nice, this is great. They're on the way up. They're winning an odd game, and as long as it wasn't England, I was pretty happy. I was loving it. And then it feels like they've just stayed there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's what is frustrating me, because they can always put against a performance against England. So what's going on here? But yeah, it really feels like they should kick on, and I don't know what it is. I do agree that there needs to be a change, but I think a rest will also probably do them good.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think why this summer tour is actually going to be very important and very crucial for the development. Like you said, the Italian side, you know, they have been investing in their clubs, but also we have a look at their under-20s as well, and they have been on the up, you know, in the past couple of years. Scotland, on the other hand, in the under-20s has been terrible for the past couple of years as well, and has been, you know, fighting with Italy to... I think, you know, they've had the wooden spoon in the under 20 Six Nations for quite some, you know, a fair few number of years. I can't remember the exact number. And I think that is a real developmental issue. You know, the pathway to the pros and, you know, to the national squad, it just seems a bit disjointed compared to other countries. You know, I'm completely for internationals to, you know, switch allegiance and to, you know, play for different countries, you know, the ones you were born in. I agree. I think it should happen. But I think that it's almost, it's covering up some major issues in the Scottish program nationally. You know, you bring in players like Doohan and Skew and Jack Dempsey, but, you know, those are holes that are just being temporarily filled by these players. You don't want to rely on players of other nationalities having a grandma or, you know, living in the country so long that they don't then come play for you. There needs to be this, there needs to be a focus on the under-20s and the development of those players to come in and be ready at the first team level. And so I think this tour, because it's going to be against the Americas and predominantly against tier two nations, This is the time to blood new players. They're, you know, Finn Russell does not need to, you know, be playing these games. This is where you have Ben Healy starting at 10. This is where you bleed the under 20s, the under 21s, or just young guys that have been on the fringes. And this is where you start planning for 2027 now already. And yeah, does that make sense?
That makes sense. That does. I think it's, yeah, smart move. I think, do you know what, just came to me, idea how to fix Scottish rugby, right?
Sure.
Right, so say they've got, you know, not a great budget, right? Instead of wasting that on like training facilities, on like teams and all of that stuff, why don't they just buy one-way tickets for all of their fit young people to go to New Zealand, South Africa, big rugby countries? And then in like 20 years when they have kids, you can reap the rewards. Like, bring them back, stack the team up, and I reckon that'd be way cheaper in the long run.
So do they just you know, accept that the next 20 years are going to be failures.
Yeah, that's true. That is true. Until then, you've just got to really keep looking. You know what? Find more like Tour Pilates, and yeah, just get them in.
And also hope that they all have boys, and otherwise, or maybe, you know, the women's program just continues to excel.
Mate, this is the way to get their women's program up an echelon as well. You know what I mean? Like, you're planning for every eventuality here.
Yeah, so we've talked a lot about Scotland, and yeah, we kind of mentioned, you know, Ireland. You know, we didn't congratulate them. You know, they managed to win the championship at the end of the day. Again, I just think they've not missed a beat. You know, coming into the Six Nations, I was expecting a bit more dominance from them in this final performance. However, again, yeah, they managed the game perfectly. You know, they didn't really take all the points on offer when they came. They kind of went to the corner a couple of times, but you had your big players kind of step up. I actually thought Josh van der Fleer came back into that World Player of the Year type of form, you know, this Six Nations. I thought he was absolutely phenomenal. And yeah, I think we've also got to give credit to Jack Crowley. You know, this is his debut tournament and he's won it. You know, he's had that 10 and made it his own.
Yeah. And realistically, he is one of like very few changes into this team. So for it to kind of keep running as efficiently is pretty credit to him. He's not slowed it down, I don't think. So that in itself is pretty high praise. Mm-hmm. Especially when you consider who his predecessor was. I heard he was pretty good.
Yeah, not bad. Not
yeah,
bad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they didn't look as infallible come the end of the tournament as they did at the start.
Mm-hmm.
Well, maybe it's just because England beat them, and that probably means you're not that good a team. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
But do you know what I mean? I think at the start of the tournament, I thought they were going to run away with it every game, and they did for the first couple of games. And come the end, it was like, ooh. So it will be interesting to see them come up against the next best team in the world in the summer. And I wonder how that will go.
Yeah, you can try and stir the pot. It's okay. We're still number one. Actually, this a quick question for you before we kind of talk about the summer tour. How would you rank the top five teams in the world? So South Africa, New Zealand, France, England, Ireland. What's your order?
As of right now, after those last two weeks for France.
Yeah, as of right now.
All right. I'm saying France.
In number five.
Hey, no. No, France won.
Sure.
South Africa, Ireland, England, New Zealand.
Why France number one?
I just think they're unreal.
Well, just because they beat you, they're now incredible.
Yeah, but the week before and everything, it was just, maybe I just like watching them the most when they play like they've been playing. That might be it.
I'm glad we are talking about this because I wouldn't put them number one, but I would put them higher than England still. I would probably go South Africa, New Zealand, Ireland, France, England, which I think is a pretty logical, you know, with the result of the Six Nations, I think that's pretty logical. I do think that France's campaign is going to go under, you know, it's kind of go under the radar, but the fact that they lost Dupont, Ontemac, and Jalibert all in the same, you know, in the same tournament and still come second, I think that is absolutely insane.
Yeah. And do you know what I think the wildest part is? In attack, and I'm going to preface this.
Yeah.
I think Ramos has actually looked the best 10 of the three. In attack. But I think, yeah, the other two definitely offer more all-round games.
So wait, you think he's better in attack than Ontemac?
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't know if I agree with that.
Yeah. I mean, look, I'm sure.
I think they offer different things in attack. Like, Jalibert is absolutely rapid, and I think his football skills are, you know, out of this world. So I thought Ramos was very good at distributing and almost unlocking everybody else's attacking potential. Whereas, yeah, I think Ntamack kind of gets the balance of them both.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think I just like that Ramos is like, unhinged is the wrong word, but like, he's just a little bit mad. Do you know what I mean? Like, he does things and you're like, oh, and then they work and you just get so excited. Yeah. But yeah, I think maybe I just like watching him the most.
Okay.
But yeah, and do you know the reason I didn't put South Africa top? And it's not just to wind you up.
Sure. I'm listening.
All right. It's because, right, World Cups, they come into their own, right? They play so well. But every single time between World Cups or between big events, mm-hmm. they drop off.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's not World Cup.
Okay.
So do you know what I mean? I'm predicting the drop, but it's not a big one, just a two.
Yeah, so you're predicting a drop even though they've not played a bit of rugby since the World Cup. So you think France have done enough in this campaign to leapfrog South Africa already?
Well, I'm just saying France have won more games than South Africa this year, Mike.
Yeah, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, I think it's actually, I understand your point, and it's very interesting. So South African rugby had their first press conference, I think it was last week already. We have new staff, and we kind of, yeah, you know, it's the first press conference of the year. Mm. And Rassie addressed that exact same point. And he says that for him, he doesn't and hasn't focused on win percentage in between World Cup. He doesn't actually mind because he has a roadmap and his team have a plan for trying to win, you know, the World Cups. And because that's, you know, the biggest prize in them all. And he would rather experiment and trial young guys and do new things with that long-term goal in mind. And kind of, it's a bit of a, you know, balancing act. We've mentioned already how it's really important to still be winning. But if you don't mind, you know, dropping from like 85% to 70% win rate, then at the end of the day, if you're winning World Cups, then you're doing something right.
I know. But I'm interested that you've put New Zealand so high when so many of their players are in Japan.
Yeah. Oh, why is that going to affect their rating?
Well, they're ineligible now.
Well, I think some of them are... I think it's really hard to do world rankings, you know, in the sense of, you know, New Zealand and South Africa haven't played. I do think that there is going to be a slight change of guard within New Zealand rugby, but I could just never count the All Blacks out. I just, you know, with Razor now taking the realms, he's now the new head coach. I just think that they'll be able to, yeah, stay at the height, you know, the top flight of world rugby.
Yeah, I hope they do because, yeah, they're just iconic.
Yeah, exactly. And I do think that, you know, I think every team in the world will struggle to beat New Zealand, you know, on New Zealand's best day. Mm-hmm. And I think no matter the team that they put out, I think it would take a really big job to beat them. So that's why they're still number two for me.
Yeah. All right, then, Mike. Last game, Italy-Wales, the wooden spooner.
Diabolical. I'll stay that and then I'll let you go. It was horrendous.
It wasn't a great game, but I think Wales played really bad. Yes. And I was actually really disappointed because it was their cup final. This is Wales' cup final. If you're getting up for one game, you have to win the last game against the team that have in like, I think it's something like 16 of the last 20, they've been the wooden spooners. Mm-hmm. And yeah, they just didn't look up for it. And yeah, I think that was a bit gutting. And I think Italy weren't as exciting as they've been, but I think they were quite pragmatic.
Mm-hmm.
They never looked out of control. Like from the moment they got their like first points, it was like, okay, they're going to win this game. And they handled that really well, especially this is probably the first time they've been favorites for a game in maybe like 100 years now. So I was impressed at that. They didn't crumble. They handled that. They got the win. I was glad that they still finished fifth.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
But they got two wins. And I think that's like the main takeaway point. You know, they managed to beat Scotland and Wales. So I think, you know, they're on their up. Not last year, the year before. And now they won two this year. So they're getting there.
Yeah, and they should have won three.
I agree.
Yeah, so, yeah, I think overall they had a really good Six Nations. I think some of their players have really put their hands up for being like just unreal. But it wasn't their wildest or most exciting game, I'd say.
No, I agree. I think that almost goes back to your beginning point. It was also their cup final. They really, really wanted that win. So I'm not surprised that they were not as exciting to watch. And as you said, very pragmatic. They just wanted to win the game. And I think they actually showed that maturity despite being quite a young team, particularly young in the sense of new coaches and new philosophies. But they managed the game phenomenally, which is why I was a bit disappointed. I was expecting a more open game, a lot of attacking rugby. And I'll briefly mention, you know, talking about Wales, their attacking display was probably the most poor display of rugby that we've seen in this Six Nations. There was no structure at all. Everybody was surprised when they got the ball. People were running, you know, against the direction that the nine had passed it because there was nothing on. All individual plays. I couldn't believe what I was watching. And credit to Italy because they defended, you know, incredibly well. But yeah, I really thought that this would be a game where Wales could, you know, build upon, you know, what they've learned in the previous 4 weeks. And it just didn't happen.
I know. I think that's the most heartbreaking thing of all because, yeah, they just didn't fire a shot. They didn't turn up. And yeah, they reckon Gatland offered his resignation in the changing room.
Is that what the rumours are?
Yeah, apparently he offered his resignation. They said no.
Wow, oh, I didn't know that.
After the game. Yeah, yeah. So they've got a long way to go, and I don't really know what they're going to do. But I actually think that whole performance changed the dynamic from, oh, Wales are plucky, they're going to come, they're plucky losers, things are growing, to like, oh, like, well, all of the good grace that they've built up has just kind of gone. Like, from now on, they've got to start performing.
Just quickly, I didn't know people can reject your resignation. Like, if the bloke wants to leave, then why is he not leaving?
I think it was it wasn't like, I want to resign.
Okay.
I performed really badly. If you want me to resign, you know, it's the kind of thing where if in like 6 months, Wales are still losing and they go, what are you doing? He's like, well, I said I'd leave.
Yeah. I actually think this is the best time to be their manager. And you know how they always talk about like Bitcoin, for example, or any sort of on stock market, you've got to buy when it's low. You've got to buy the dip.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, then it's going to skyrocket. I think that's what's going to happen with Welsh rugby. Like, realistically, they are at the bottom and there's not much further they can go. They are struggling in the clubs. They're struggling financially. It will eventually get sorted out some way or another. Like, it just will, I think. And I don't know how long that will take, but they've also had massive changes post-World Cup. You know, they've had so many key players retire, really young squad. I just give it just a bit more time. Like, think about the growth that England have had in a year since Steve Borthwick overtook the role. Why can we not see a similar, if not even better, growth from Wales in a year?
Yeah, I think there's a difference between buying the dip and buying just before administration. Like, I'm against administration. You know what I mean?
Like, I'm an optimist.
Yeah. I actually reckon if Gatland went, this manager would have a rough time, but their next manager after that, that's the guy you want to be. Do you know what I mean? They've been rubbish. And it's almost a bit like Italy, right? Like, yeah. Crowley came in, he did loads of work on their attack. They took them to a place where their skills were a lot better. And then what they needed was, and I can't remember his name, but this guy'd come in and
Quesada,
and to tell them to believe in themselves, tell them they can do it. And
yeah,
the skills are already there. And now they've got this behind them, something new, and they've gone and done it. I think you need someone to just do that slog for Wales. Mm-hmm. And Gatland might be the best guy for it, where you kind of build them up, get them ready. And then when he goes, the next person comes in,
mm-hmm.
and it should just be like, you can do this, you've got the skills, and then them just fly.
Yeah, it's a tough draw. You kind of always want that to happen under your role as the manager. But yeah, I think they stick with Gatlin. I think that's the sensible thing. And you know, that guy's a veteran. His accolades are phenomenal with what he's done in Welsh rugby and Lions rugby. So with that being said, again, they'll need to have some success in the summer. And yeah, just to have some sort of signs of improvement. But yeah, I think next year, 2 years, they'll be on the up.
Yeah, it's a rough one. They go into Australia this summer.
I know.
They absolutely did over in the World Cup. And I think they're going to want revenge.
I know. No. But I do think, like, for example, Mason Grady, when he came off the bench against Italy, I thought he was their best player. Wales were really struggling to get over the gain line the entire game. This guy comes on and just caused absolute havoc. And again, incredibly young guy as well. So just start him now. George North retired. You know, fair play to him, what a career he's had. And yeah, Nick Tompkins came off early as well. Yeah, you know, buy in now. Buy in the youngsters and watch how it turns out. And yeah, well, what a challenge they've got ahead of them going down to Australia, who also have a lot to prove in the summer as well.
Yeah, I know, especially as like Australia hosting the Lions next year,
mm-hmm.
and they've got the next World Cup.
It's crazy, the Lions is next year already. It feels just like, you know, the other day when South Africa managed to beat the Lions.
Oh, none of that. Yeah, but no, it's definitely exciting. But Mike, talking of exciting players, mm-hmm. and everyone, you know, everyone's going on, they're doing their team in the Six Nations, it's all boring, mm-hmm. everyone's picking the same players.
Sure. Right?
I reckon we do one, but we draft them.
Okay.
So what's going to happen is, you know, we'll do like a snake draft. So you get first pick and then I get two and then you get two. Doesn't yep. matter what position, you just got to have, it does when you pick them, but it doesn't matter what. Let me
say that again. Tag foil at number 10, sure. Yeah.
It doesn't matter what order you pick them in, okay. But you have to have, 1 to 15 and, yeah. How's okay, that I'll, sound?
Yeah, I like this.
See who's best.
Yeah, so we can then see who's got the better team at the end of the day. Okay, are we gonna start now?
I reckon so.
Okay, right. So I have the first pick. So this is really tough. I feel like you can't go too wrong with the first pick. Mm. I think when you come down the line, because obviously I could pick a completely different position to you, and it's not going to matter. So it's like, who do I value the most? I'm going to go Dan Sheehan and my hooker. I think he was far and out the best hooker available. I don't think anybody else came close to him, to be honest. So in that aspect, I think he is my most valuable player.
Wow. I'd love that. Mate, I'm going big. I'm going Ben O.
See, I thought you were going to go Ben Earl. I was thinking about him. He's my number one as well.
Yeah, I think he's been best player of the tournament.
consistent. I mean, he has got that nomination, so I think that's very fair.
But I think even in the games we were bad, he was good.
Sure.
And that's why I'm so impressed with him.
Sure.
And then for my second pick, I'm gonna take Lamar at 7.
Oh, damn it. That's what I was just thinking about.
Because, like, mate, he's had the most tackles in a Six Nations tournament ever.
Really?
Yeah, 103.
That is phenomenal.
He's averaged over 20 tackles a game.
Yeah, that is really impressive. Okay. Man, this is really challenging. I'll also go back row. I'm going to go at my 6. I'm going to go Francois Crow.
Good shout.
I think particularly in that last game against England, he was just a guy that got better and better. Stepped up when, you know, Jolonch is injured, when Aldrete was injured. I thought he was sensational particularly in that final game. So, yeah, he gets the call. And then to go from here, I'll go Bundyaki. Ooh. at my 12.
Oh, big.
Indeed big. That is the one word to describe him. Again, he just continued his form from the World Cup, but he's just a no-brainer. Best 12 in the comp. Arguably best 12 in the world, potentially.
Wow. Yeah, mate, you know he's 34? I didn't realise he was that old.
Wow, good for him. Yeah. He can move, eh?
Look at him go.
Yeah, wow. Wow. Okay, where are you going next?
Right, I'm going Garbisi at 10.
Okay.
Oh, it sounds like you weren't going to pick him.
Well, I'll never know.
And then I'm going to go Andrew Porter at loose head.
Oh, yeah, you can have him. Yeah.
Because I think, he was like a step above everyone else at loose head. Do you know what I'm saying?
Okay.
I think, all the other loose heads were pretty good, but not as good.
I mean, I disagree, and I don't think I'm going to go. I don't think I'm going to go loose head right now. Mm. However, I think that for you, I think Porter just his scrumming just is not up to shape yet. I just think
this championship he was barely getting pinged.
Yeah, but that's the thing. But I don't think he's dominant. That's the issue. I don't. Great. He's not conceding penalties. Fantastic. Yeah. But he's not dominating the scrums yet. And so I think that's where he's got to go in his game still. Mm. Right. So I think for me, I'm going to go. I'm going to go Tadhg Burn.
Yeah.
Is he a 4 or 5?
Second rows are interchangeable.
Okay, cool. Right, I'll go Tadhg Burn at my 4, and then I will go. I'll go Ramos at 15.
Ooh.
And just because, Tadhg Burn, no questions asked. I'm sure you probably would have had him if you could, and I'll go Ramos at 15 just because. Yeah, he had to take on a much bigger role, particularly just in terms of like the overall leadership within the team, having lost so many key players. He was, just super reliable throughout the entire tournament.
Yeah.
And he kicked the winning penalty against England. So that's big ticks.
All right, I'm going big. I'm going big here. I'm going for Brex, 13. I think he was by far the best 13.
Okay.
By far as well. Not even close. I was really worried you're going to pick him. And then at 11, I'm going for James Lowe.
Okay. Yeah. Yep.
Right. He amazes me because he's got a massive boot, right? And that is his point of difference. But I wouldn't say anything else in his game is like world class. But he is. Like, he is better than the sum of his parts is what I always think. He always plays better than what you think he should be able to do.
Mm-hmm.
And it's unreal. I think he's so good, but should just cut his hair.
Yeah, I'm sure he'll listen to that piece of advice. I'm going to go my 9. I'm going to go Le Garec. Oh, did I hit you? It's been like battleships. I'm like sinking your face. Yeah. Yeah, LeGarrick. I think I was debating between another player, but I think LeGarrick, he just had the biggest improvement in terms of the tournament. And had he had played more minutes, I think we would have been talking about him for longer and even more highly of him. So he gets my starting nine. I'm going to go Antonio at my tight head.
Massive.
He
literally massive.
I thought he was going to be past his prime. You know, he was going to retire from from international rugby after the World Cup. Came back, still did bits. Thought he was really, really good. Really impressive.
Yeah, very good. Yeah. Yeah. I'm going to take George Martin at five.
Okay.
Just because I think he made a massive difference when he came back from injury.
Mm-hmm.
And then on the wing, I'm gonna get a Welsh player. I'm gonna have Rhea Dyer.
Nice. Yeah. Nice. Yeah, he was their shining star. Absolutely. Yeah.
Plus I absolutely refused to pick Van der Merwe.
I know, me too. Okay, so right, okay, I am gonna go crikey for my seven. I'm pretty sure he's a seven. I'm gonna go Rafael.
Yeah, nice.
I think thinking about shining stars for Wales, he was phenomenal. Most turnovers, well, almost the record number of turnovers in this competition. And then I will go, you know what? I'm going to go Jenkins at my five.
Nice.
I just think the young captain, he again had to move positions, but he did a lot of the dirty work that wasn't seen. You know, none of the flashy plays. He just does the clear outs, the tackling. Yeah, I need a bit of like a grunt worker, you know, yeah, in my pack. So that's what I've gone for.
Yeah. Oof. I like that. That's a good pick. At nine, I'm taking Gibson Park.
Yeah, okay. He was my other pick, yeah.
Yeah. I think he's actually, technically, I think he's better than LeGarrick. He's just a bit less exciting. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Okay.
And I need someone to steady the ship because I'm trying to have a wild team here. So that leadership and presence at nine is really going to be invaluable.
Shut up.
And then at 15, I'm going to go for Kinghorn.
Kinghorn?
Mate, I feel bad because I didn't have any other Scottish name in my head for any position. But I think he's underrated.
Okay.
Yeah.
I personally think he just needs a bit longer at Toulouse before he goes higher in my ratings. But he's in the best place to learn, in my opinion. So good for him.
Yeah, I think he makes space for people. And he's rapid when he doesn't look like he should be.
Yeah.
And he's just got good distribution. That's why they played him at 10, but I'm glad he's at 15.
I will also go, I'll go Scottish. And I'm going to go Schoeman as my loose head. I think he is just an all-round complete loose head prop.
Yeah.
Personally.
Way faster as well after his haircut. Aerodynamics.
He looks so much better, doesn't he? He looks so much better. And then I think I'll probably go for the wing next. And I'm probably going to go to a number 11. And I'm going to go Louis Bié-Barré.
Nice.
I thought he actually was the best French winger throughout the competition. And yeah, looked electric. Really, really electric. And, you know, pretty much won France that game against Scotland with that individual effort. So, yeah, that's who I'm going with.
Wow, that's big. That is big.
Yeah, you got to start picking some forwards, Ben. You've been...
Yeah, I'm lacking. All right, I'm going for two now.
Oh, go for it.
Hey, two English forwards.
Oh, shock.
Jamie George.
Okay.
I think that's fair. I think he was definitely the second best hooker this comp.
Mm-hmm.
Mate, you're right. I've got Andrew Porter. I need some solid scrummaging. Mm-hmm. I need a number three who's going to dominate in the scrum.
Yeah.
Dan Cole.
Oh, you're saying that because you want to be a guest on his podcast. That's all you're saying.
Hey, it's because I want to join the fan club. Did you see those pictures?
No, I don't think I did.
Oh, there was like an Open England training session, right?
Right.
And someone from like a rugby team, her and her like her friends all went, put bold caps on, dressed in England shirt, and had like a thing like Dan Cole fan club.
Oh my goodness.
Bold caps. Oh mate, it was so good.
Wow.
I'll send you a picture, I'll find out.
Yeah, what, have you in a bold cap?
No, I haven't got a bold cap yet, but I could just go for a bold Dan Cole.
I'm sure Katie will love that. Two strong choices, I think, from you. Man, your pack is looking very English at the moment. I mean, yeah, interesting you've chosen no English backs at the moment, just to kind of point that out.
Yeah.
Even though we were talking about how good England's attack was, but never mind.
It all came from the forwards, though.
Yeah. Okay, I thought Brex was a really good choice for you at 13.
Mm.
I don't think he was the best. I think he was most improved. The best 13 for me was Hugh Jones. I think he just was the most reliable. He just has this magic about him and proved that he could do it without having 2+2 there all the time. That how he scored that try against Ireland this past weekend, I have no idea. He was just slippery as anything.
Yeah, I think he probably nailed on for the 13 shirt for the Ireland or for the Lions at the minute.
Yeah, I think so too. Yeah. I think so too. I think, yeah, that's also because Gara Ringrose, you know, he's kind of had a bit of string of injuries as well. So, yeah, I think it would be between those two, really.
Mm.
And then I will go, man, I'm really indecisive about my 10.
Should have had Ramos.
No, I wasn't going to do that. Okay, yeah, actually, I'll finish my pack. I'm going to go Kalyn Doris as my number 8. Again, he wasn't standout as such. He was required to carry a lot, but my word, his work rate off the ball was just exceptional. And the amount of like attacking and defensive rucks that he hit, and just, again, he's, you know, younger than us. He's 24, so... yeah, he another great shift from what will be a world-class 8 for the next near decade.
Yeah, I know. That was a good pick. I was actually going to hope, because he played one game at 6, I was going to try and shoot in a bit. But, yeah, this is a tough one. I'm going to go Seb Negri at 6.
Yeah, good shout.
Do you know what? It's a position where not a lot of people stood out.
No, it was, yeah, that's why I went with Crow, because I thought he was the only one.
Yeah, but I think it was also a position that is quite game dependent now, whereas it used to be like you have a 6,
mm-hmm.
whereas now it's like, do you have a line out option? Do you have a ball carrier?
Yeah.
Who do you have at 6?
Yeah.
And it's just a bit more flexible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it also like depends on like, so for example, like the number 7 shirt, yeah, who you've got as the open side is also then, you know, what type of balance do you want? Because, yeah, if you've got, because like, for example, with England, you had Ollie Chessum, you know, kind of going to that 6 to kind of be like the Peter Steph de Toy, you know, your kind of bruiser, your hard worker, and then allow Sam Underhill to kind of, you know, be a bit more around the park. But sorry, carry on.
I'll say, and then to round out my pack, I'm going Joe McCarthy in the second row.
Yeah. Yeah, nice.
I think that's a nasty pack. And, hey, I think that's... I'm pretty confident.
Yeah, those packs are... Yeah, it'd be interesting. Interesting battle, for sure. Okay, so then to finish it out for me, I'm going to go... My 14, I'm going to go Pinot. I'm going to go for an all-French back 3. I just think that... He kind of grew into his own. He wasn't amazing at the beginning, but then just got better and better. And in the biggest game against England, he showed up and was fantastic. So I definitely have an English bias in my team, you know, who performed the best against England in my team. So, and then, yeah, I'm going to go Finn Russell to round out my 10.
Oh, I was pick from the tournament.
Hey,
not who I'd have picked in the tournament.
Yeah. I just think I was going to go Crowley. I was, but I just think I like Finn Russell still. I think, yeah, he didn't have, I think we're probably thinking a bit recency bias, you know, not doing so well in the most recent game, but I think in the rest of the competition, I think he did enough to get my starting 10.
Wow. All I'm saying is, Mike, you've not picked a single English person, and at 10, right? George Ford single-handedly pretty much dragged us to the two wins at the start, was unbelievable in unpicking the Irish defence, and was ridiculous again on Saturday. He did not play well against Scotland. In fact, I'm not even sure he was on the pitch. But, hey, I can't believe you've not picked him there.
You know what? I'll be honest. I didn't even think about him. His name didn't even come to my mind. It was between him and between Finn Russell and Crowley. I didn't even consider an English team. That's my bad. He has a strong argument, but, and I actually did not mean to not pick a single Englishman.
Snubbed. Absolutely snubbed.
I feel very proud, actually. Okay, who are you going with 12?
Look, Mike, last but definitely not least, right? Every single week, right? No matter if they won or lost, we said, how good is this guy, right? We've got Brex at 13, Menoncello at 12, baby, bringing it home. I think he probably played better than Bundy Aki. I think Aki was like solid throughout, but Bundy Aki had a game where you thought, wow, he was just coming pretty solid.
No, I disagree. I think the only reason we say this about Menoncello is because we didn't know what to expect with him. But with Bundy Aki, we've become accustomed to the level that he plays at, and therefore we're not that surprised or that blown away by his performances anymore. However, with Menoncello, we are. He's fresh. He's new on the scene.
Yeah. But I think, you know, the cohesion in my centre partnership, it's just a thing of beauty.
Well, I think mine is too, because I think you can make the argument that, you know, Tuipulotu and Bundy Aki play similar roles to then be able to unlock Hugh Jones. So,
yeah. Well, cracking teams. I reckon if they played, it would be
a draw.
Well, no, I think we'd just pip you last minute.
What do you mean? I've got Ramos.
Yeah, true. I've got Garbisi. Last minute to win the game, we'd have a kick.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, both fantastic teams. I think it also just shows that quite a lot of people had really good tournaments. And, you know, there are definitely some new names on there. Quite a lot of Italians, you know, that you picked. What a tournament. And, we'll see what the people think. We'll see who thinks they had the better team.
Yeah, mate, can you imagine if a year ago I'd picked 5 Italians in a team?
I know. That's mind-blowing.
Do you know what? I was actually going to talk to you about this, not on the pod, but I'm going to bring it up. Not really relevant to anything we've spoken about so far.
Okay.
Something that I've been thinking for maybe 3 or 4 weeks.
Wow.
All right. Do you think the back row position is overrated in rugby? Right, hear me out. Often, right, you think about the best players on most teams. Most of them are back rows, right? And people always cite turnovers, they cite tackles, which is actually just a back row's job. Do you know what I mean? If people were looking and measuring off scrum wins or line-out wins, the front row or the second row would be the best position.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, and if nearly every team's best players are back row, maybe back rows are just overrated.
I don't think I could disagree with you anymore. To be perfectly honest, I think that the reason why we speak so highly of back rows is just because of the impact that they have and the type of athletes that they are, because they tend to be, amongst the three position, they're kind of like the do-it-all kind of players. You've got good scrummaging, good turnover ability, good tackling, but also like fitness and level of, you know, particularly of your flankers. Like there, I remember when like Italy made that break off the set piece, you know, when Ioane kind of like did that like loop, that late loop. It was like Tommy Rafael who like tracked all the way across the field to make that tackle to stop them scoring.
Yeah.
So I think they are completely invaluable. And I think, yeah, they are probably, yeah, like I said, they're doing some of the work that gets highlighted more, but those are the types of plays that win you the games. Like, I do think the other work that the rest of the forward pack do is, yeah, also allows you to win games. But yeah, they're the back row. I'm also a little bit biased because I played back row for like my entire career. So, I think I'm amazing. And I think, I'm kidding. Yeah, I don't think they're overrated. I just think we're just seeing like more and more incredible athletes, you know, in those positions.
But if they're so good, why aren't you putting them in other positions? Do you know what I mean?
If they
are that good, like people were talking about Ben Earl playing 12.
Well, that's a load of nonsense.
Do you know what I mean? This is what I'm saying. Like, you wouldn't play them anywhere else. You wouldn't sacrifice another player to play them. But we talk them up so much. Like, I think it's because what they do, tackles, turnovers, carries, like, it's just the exciting stuff and the stuff that's really easy to get stats on.
Mm-hmm.
So you can talk about their impacts. There's a lot of other players you can't.
I don't know if I agree with that, because you could easily say for like a back, you know, all about like defenders beaten and, you know, meters made, try scored, you know, those are probably more exciting actually in terms of stats, but we don't hype those players up as much as we do back rows. And I think we would expect that of backline players, but yeah, we praise them because everybody else has one job essentially.
Mm.
And back rows they're the most versatile players on the pitch. So we are praising them for doing more than one job. It doesn't mean that, you know, they are, you know, Ben Earl is going to be a better 12 than a specialized center, but he could do an all right job.
Yeah, because this is it. Like, I definitely am not. I'm not trying to like devalue the players. It's mm-hmm. more like we just talk about back row so much,
mm-hmm.
and if everyone's back rows are good, maybe no back rows are good. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's why I thought I'd just ask and see, get your opinion on it.
I mean, I think what needs to happen. I think we just need to. It's difficult because I think to the casual viewer, those guys are going to be making the big plays. Mm. But to the real fans, or, you know, those that know the game a bit more, they'll recognize like the dirty work that David Jenkins does, or Joe McCarthy, or the front row at scrum time, at line out time, in the rucks. And yeah, we just need to sing their praises a bit more often.
Yeah. Because the other reason I've got for this, and I've not got it in front of me, which is really not that helpful, but when you look at best paid positions,
mm-hmm.
back row players are actually not that high.
Right.
Like, they're about the middle of the pack, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. Ironic, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But you'd think if they were as good as everyone kind of talks, it would be the highest paid position. Do you know what I mean? This is kind of why I think, like, are they overrated?
Are they, is like 6, 7, and 8, are they all classified as back row players in terms of that payment?
I think they've got them separate. So it's 7, 8, 6.
Okay. Yeah, it's a tricky one. I think also, I think that might just be because, not due to the value of the position, but just the amount of players that play that position.
Mm.
And because there are so many good back rowers, you don't need to be paid as much because we can go find another guy that could do a very similar job to you.
Yeah, but you do need 3 of them. You only need 110. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. True. But again, you know, all the back row players are not the same. You know, we talked about how Ollie Chesham is very different to Ben Earl. So
Yeah, it is true. And I am playing devil's advocate because I know. I do think Magro is probably the best player.
I think it's a very good point. I think it's very good. But yeah, and you guys can let us know if you think back rows are overrated and whether we need to increase their pay.
Yeah, that's true. But most importantly, send in the most overrated back rowers. Is there anyone that comes to mind? Ooh, no, but I think that's kind of part of it. If you can't think of an overrated player in a position, that's a worrying thing.
Yeah. Bugger. Did I just help you win that argument?
I'm going to claim it. But we've also got to shout out a special fan. It's his birthday. He is Scottish, so he probably doesn't like me that much. But Mike, I'll let you take the floor.
Yeah, no, just a shout out to Cammy Wilson for letting me sit in the living room and film the podcast, and so I have to banish him to his room whilst I do this. And we also apologize for all the bashing to Scotland we've done over the past 5 weeks.
And
in the World Cup. Yeah, it's just not been a good time for him. That's why we're going to shout him out. So happy birthday, Cammy.
Yeah, congrats. You are our fan of the week.
Incredible. But to the rest of the other fans, we love you too.
Yeah, you could be the fan of next week. Send in your overrated back rowers.
Yeah, or send us a check. Either or. yeah, but thanks everybody for listening.
Yeah, cheers, guys.